Hey guys, it's your girl Aja Pearl, and welcome to the world of Aja Pearl. It's my world, and I'm so happy you're here. Today we're going to read chapter 2 of my very first book, Chalice, the Book of Life. Chalice, the Book of Life is part of a trilogy that I am working on. I'm working on a second book entitled Chalice, the Book of Love. And then after that will be Chalice, the Book of Forgiveness. The book, Chalice, the Book of Life, is now available on Amazon, BookBub, and now Walmart online. It's not sold in stores in Walmart. You have to get it online. And the paperback is sold at $11, as well as on Amazon. It's also sold on $11 on Amazon. And it's also available in Kindle, which is $4. And if you already have Kindle, it's free. So, without any further ado, here's chapter 2 of Chalice, the Book of Life. And it starts off with a reading from the Book of Romans, chapter 12, verse 9 and 10. Love must be heartfelt. Hate what is evil. Hold on to what is right. Love one another warmly as Christians and be eager to show respect to one another. Another busy day at Newkirk's is over. Christopher Newkirk reaches his house keys on his key ring. He has so many keys on his chain. Finally, he opens the door. Christopher Newkirk is a proud owner of the bar Newkirk's. With the help of his wife Valentine, they invest every cent they own to flip and run a shack. To flip a rundown shack into a neighborhood hangout. To some patrons, it's a second home. Anyone who goes to the bar is welcome, and no one is considered a stranger. Once a person enters Newkirk's, they are automatically family. Along with their business venture, the couple also has time to produce a family of their own. They have a daughter named Yvonne Lee, who is named after the legendary actress Yvonne DiCarlo. A son followed a couple years later. They named their son Archer because it has a symbolic relation to his mother's name, Valentine. "Val, kids, I'm home," he calls out to his family. The lights were off except for one in the living room. As Christopher walks towards the living room, he sees his wife sitting on a couch motionless. "Val," Christopher calls to her with concern. He drops his bag on the floor and rushes to her side. "Sweetheart, what's wrong? Are the children okay?" he asks. Valentine nods her head. "That was Isham on the phone," she said. "Isham? Did something happen to Ish?" "Nothing happened to him. Nothing happened to Isham," Valentine cries as she wipes her eyes. "But something happened to Nevin." "Nevin? What the hell happened to Nevin?" Valentine begins to cry again. "Val, tell me what happened to Nevin," Christopher exclaims, holding her arms to her sides. "He's dead, Chris. Nevin is dead." Christopher is in shock. He slowly releases her grip off of her arms. "Baby, I'm so sorry," cries Valentine. The news hits Christopher like a wrecking ball hitting a building. He is paralyzed by the story of one of his dear friends. Nevin is dead. The thought seems so unbelievable. "Babe," Christopher asks in shock to his wife, how did he die?" "They found him dead in his apartment. Isham told me that music was playing so loud from his apartment. The police had to break down the door. They found him in his bed, holding a liquor bottle. The coroner said it was alcohol poisoning." Christopher begins to weep for Nevin. "Nevin, no," he cries through his tears. "Not my ace." He claps to the floor, covering his face. Valentine wraps her arms around him and holds him close to her. After calming down, he asks her, "When is the funeral?" They had a viewing of the body last Tuesday, and this Friday will be the funeral. Nevin wanted you to read his obituary.
Me?
Why me? What about his wife? Nevin wanted someone who had more value to him than Sabine. I can't believe I'm asking this question, but did you call? You know? She turns to him and asks, wow. Chris, are you tripping? Probably. Otherwise, the thought of Sabine would never cross my mind. Why would I do something like that? It's not like the woman and I are best friends. We are not acquaintances. No. I hate her guts. Christopher goes for the phone. Who are you calling? Valentine asks. Sabine, why would you call her? Look, we need to put our differences aside for at least a minute. We just lost a wonderful man. I don't want to call her, but she was his wife, and I'm concerned about the children. Besides, it's a Christian thing to do. Valentine shakes her head. The phone rang a few times. Hello? The person answers. Christopher takes a deep breath. Hi, Sabine. It's Christopher from Newkirk's. Yes. I'm calling to see if you and the children are okay. Of course. Why wouldn't we? Because your husband just died? Oh, that. We're doing fine. If you think about it, it's Nevin's fault for leaving his family to be with a gay lover. With his gay lover. Gay lover? What gay lover? You can't be serious. Out of all people, you didn't know that your best friend was gay? Nevin was not gay. If you're referring to Vanilla Coco Bean, that does not make him gay. Sabine laughed. You know, Sabine started, it makes me laugh when men like Nevin try so hard to be a woman, and they come up with the most outlandish names for themselves. This thing he invented, Vanilla Coco Bean, could never be a real woman. Yeah, it may have had a voice, but that's all it had going for them. Whatever the creature calls itself. At the end of the day, it's nothing but a wannabe. Christopher thinks to himself, she thinks Nevin and Vanilla Coco Bean are two different people. Sabine, Christopher starts, why are you so bitter? If he was gay, which I find hard to believe, at least he found someone willing to give him the one thing you couldn't imagine, love. A person like you wouldn't know anything like that. You're not a likable person. You're so unlikable, a serial rapist would get repulsed by spitting on you alone. Sabine laughs and says, say what you want, Christopher. Of course he was gay. I know all about Nevin dressing in drag. What the hell are you talking about, mental case? You can act stupid all you want. I know Nevin and this Coco bitch were the same person. But how a wife knows her husband, especially when he comes camouflaged so well. Sabine giggles and continues. I happened to stop by at your little bar one evening to confront him about his visits with the children, as well as my money. We may not have been living together, but he still had an obligation to his wife and children. Anyway, to my surprise, I see my husband dressed as a woman, not to mention singing like a woman. It was disgusting. I was so horrified I left the bar. It didn't take me long to launch an investigation and get him. An investigation? Is that the reason why you made it difficult for him to see his children? Think about it. A man who is secretly gay finally leaves his wife and children for his gay lover? I do not feel the courts would go for that. It wouldn't surprise me if he had the AIDS virus. You heartless bitch. Am I that heartless to protect her children from such a sinful lifestyle? I also know about this transsexual lover, their sordid love affair, and that Nevin is responsible for his lover's death. That thing probably gave him the AIDS those people were keep getting. Oh well, serves them both right for living in sin. What death? What lover? I'm talking about the other freak of nature. What was his name? Sunset? The thought of him in bed together makes my skin crawl. By the way, tell your friends in the Rainbow District I forbid them to come to the funeral. I was not expecting hardly anyone to show up in the wake, but those fairies happened to fly by the parlor. They are nothing but an abomination to the Lord, just like Nevin. If I had it my way, Nevin's coffin would be nothing but a trash bag, and his final resting place would be the city dump. My mother warned us not to get married. She knew we were incompatible from the start. Christopher became so angry at her insults, he says, "Go to hell, you hateful bitch." Christopher slammed the receiver down on the base. He was so angry his face was bright red. "What happened, Chris?" his wife asked. "I don't know why I bother. That woman is a monster," Christopher replies. "What did she say?" "What did she say?" "First, she was so blasé about her own husband's death. Her husband, Val." "Shh. The children are sleeping," Valentine scolds. "Sorry, but she makes me so angry. Plus, Sabine was behind the investigation against Nevin." "Is that how Nevin lost custody of the children?" "Yeah. Sabine must have told vicious lies on him, and everything else must have support those lies to look like the truth." "Like what?" "The vanilla cocoa bean persona in Sunset." "Well, what did you expect, sweetheart? Finding humility in that woman is like digging for gold." Christopher shakes his head. "What else did she say?" Valentine asks. "Then she accused Nevin, of being a homosexual. She said that Nevin was probably responsible for killing his so-called gay lover because he probably gave him..." "Gave him what? Tell me." "AIDS." "She said what?" "Nevin has never been attracted to men, and he's never contracted AIDS from anyone." "Oh, but that's not all." "Wow, there's more," Valentine replies sarcastically. "She tells me that the Rainbow District cannot come to the funeral because they're an abomination to the Lord. Most of all, she thinks of Nevin as nothing but garbage." Christopher is so upset that he begins to cry all over again. Through his tears, he says, "That bitch did it." "Did what?" "She drove him to his death." "You think Sabine is responsible?" "Val, he grew tired of playing her games. When he finally had enough of her, she punished him by using those three angels as pawns to manipulate him. It must have driven him to madness. Can't imagine being without my babies." "Me neither. That man was one of the greatest men I've ever knew. He deserved a whole lot better than that shit she gave him. I hope now he finds his peace, because he wasn't getting it on earth." "There's something I don't understand." "What's that, my love?" "Vanilla cocoa bean. Was she Nevin?" He looks at his wife with tears in his eyes and says, "Yeah." "And you didn't tell me?" she yells. "Shh, Val, the children." Valentine says softly, "I am your wife. How could you?" "I was sworn to secrecy by Nevin. You know Nevin was a private man. Isham was in this too? Oh, I get it. It's a man thing, right?" "No, Val." Christopher sits Valentine on a couch. He explains, "I promised him that vanilla cocoa bean would be a secret. Otherwise, the wrong people would have found out about his singing career, like Sabine and any other money-hungry opportunists. I'm your wife, Christopher. Baby, please believe me. I didn't mean to lie to you. Valentine looked away from Christopher and shook her head. Let me explain, he starts. I saw Nevin mopping the floors in the bathroom. Hey, Nevin, I said. Come into my office. We need to talk. Sure, I'll be right there, he said. I was in my office filling out some documents until I heard a rapping at my door. Come in, I said. Hey, Chief, he greeted. Nevin, just the man I wanted to see. Close the door. We have to close the door and have a seat. He sat down in my chair, and he looked kind of nervous. So after reassuring him that it wasn't bad news, he calmed down. Okay, Nevin started. I've been okay. Ish let me bunk with him until I get on my feet. Good. Now, I've watched you work around the bar, and I wanted to say you've been doing a fantastic job. Thank you, Chris. No, I'm serious. The bar is so immaculate, Jesus himself would be speechless. We both laugh. Come on. You know it's true, I said. Yeah, Nevin said bashfully. Since you've been doing such a great job in maintaining the bar upkeep, I would like to give you a promotion.
A promotion? Wow, I don't know what to say. Just say yes.
I would, except, well, what's the promotion?
Lounge singer.
Huh?
Lounge singer? No way.
Nev, I have heard you sing to yourself while you work. You have a beautiful voice.
A little feminine, but it's mind-blowing. Chief,
I can't accept your offer. As much as singing is my first love, it was never meant to be.
Yes, it can. You can. Follow your heart. Do what makes you happy.
I did, and look at me now. Nevin smiled and let out a slight sigh.
Okay, he replied.
Really?
I asked.
Yeah, Chris. Let's just do this before I realize what I'm doing and renege on this whole thing.
Okay. Now, I have given this a lot of thought. I know you're a private person, so we're going to give you an alter ego.
Okay.
But there's the kicker. Your alter ego is a woman.
A woman? Are you crazy? Dude, it's going to be great.
Oh. It's the fact that I sound like a chick when I sing, right?
Well, you do.
So this promotion is turning into a freak. Plus, you know, half of our clientele is non-heterosexual. So what's the big deal?
I'm not gay, Chief.
No, this is a bad idea.
Everyone knows you're not gay. That's a fact. But it's an act. You're pretending to be a female lounge singer.
Man, this idea is more nuts than a candy bar.
However, Nevin thought about it. He realized I had a point. This was an act, and he knew that he had no desire to be with another man.
Okay, replied Nevin.
Okay, I asked.
Yes, okay.
I know that I'm going to regret asking this, but what's my name as this chick?
Vanilla Cocoa Bean.
Oh, that's special, Nevin said sarcastically. Nevin, trust me, dude. It's going to be good.
Aw, man. This is crazy, man.
But it's going to be good. I'll split the profit 50-50.
Whether it's a dead or alive audience, 50-50, no matter what. No matter what. To show that I'm a man of my word and an honest businessman, this is a written agreement based on what is discussed today. I want you to read it carefully. It took him 10 minutes to read. I was afraid that he was going to go back on the deal after reading it. He looked at me, handed me the paper, and sat back in his chair with his hands folded. I was bewildered by his body language. "One question," Nevin asked. "What's that?" I asked. "What about my wife? How am I going to explain this to her?" "You don't have to explain anything to her. Anyway, she threw you out on the street and did not care about your well-being."
"She cares about my check, exactly. The only thing she needs to know is that you're still working. That's it."
"And with this new gig, I will make more money."
"Nev, you have a golden voice. People will cheer. People will weep. People will..."
"Okay. Okay. You made your point. So, will you do it?"
Then Nevin smiled and said, "You got it, deal. You got a deal, boss." With that, we shook on it.
He was doing great. The bar was practically packed every night. Next thing I know, he wants out of the whole thing and drops off the face of the earth.
But what? Valentine asked. "Now I know the reason he left so suddenly."
"Why?"
"Sabine must have lied to the family court about Nevin. She must have told him that he was gay and left his family to live with his alternate lifestyle. She also mentioned someone named Sunset. Sabine must have told him that Nevin was involved with someone named Sunset, but who is Sunset?"
Valentine begins to remember her first time seeing Nevin on stage.
"Wait a second. That woman performing at our bar was Nevin the entire time?"
"Yes."
"Unbelievable. Well, I don't know anyone named Sunset, but I have to hand it to Nevin. He looked stunning dressed as a woman. Not to mention he had a voice of an angel.
Too bad he had to end. Too bad it had to end.
So why didn't he make a career out of his talent?
He didn't care about being famous.
It wasn't his thing, I guess. However, I made sure those triplets were set for life."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, he made sure those triplets were set for life."
"What do you mean?"
"After Nevin quit singing, he left me in charge of 3 keys. Each key has a different safety deposit box for Argentina, Mandela, and Corinthian."
"Wow.
Does the children mama know?"
"That's the good part. Sabine has no clue about the keys. And if she did know about the safety deposit box, she would have full control over that money."
"That is good.
Look, Chris, a lot has happened already. We'll get through this, just like everything else. Yes, Nevin is gone, but we have to be strong for each other. Most of all, we cannot let evil get the best of us."
Then a little figure slowly walks into the living room. It's little Archer Newkirk. He's wearing his little footed pajamas and dragging his glowworm.
"Mommy, I'm thirsty," Archer says softly, rubbing his eyes and dragging his glowworm doll on the carpet.
She goes to aid Archer.
"Okay, Archie, let's go get some water," Valentine suggests as she carries Archer in his arms.
"I'll be back," Valentine tells Christopher as he carried their son to the kitchen.
"Okay."
He places his arms around his head and thinks to himself, "What am I gonna do?" After Valentine gives Archer his water and sends him to bed, she goes back to the kitchen to retrieve 2 frosty glasses of malt liquor. Valentine then goes back into the living room to be with her husband after filling the 2 glasses.
"Here," Valentine says, handing her husband the glass of beer.
"I think we both need a buzz."
"You're too good to me, baby,"
Christopher says with a smile, taking the glass from his wife.
Christopher took a drink from his glass and replies, "Nevin is gone, baby."
"I know.
Do you know anything? I'm going to
You want to know something? I'm going to throw a party for Nevin.
A party?
Yeah, a party. Just because the man is dead doesn't mean that it has to be a sad occasion. It'll be a celebration of Nevin's life and work.
Yeah.
And anyone is invited. Do you think we'll see Isham? Why wouldn't Isham show up for his own friend's funeral? He hates funerals. And he's been MIA for work lately. We're going to have a serious talk when I see him.
I don't know, babe.
It would be a shame if he did not show up for his best friend's funeral. I don't give a damn what Sabine says. Our friends will be there at Nevin's funeral. Homophobic bitch.
Who is she?
His wife. Mother of his children.
Yeah, but who is she really? Christopher replies as he took a drink of his beer. Who made her God?
Narcissistic, stuck up.
Yeah,
she is. Valentine agrees. Those poor children, she brings nothing but havoc on those babies. I miss them. Vaughn misses them, and Archie misses them. Ever since Nevin and Sabine's separation, we hardly see the triplets anymore. Now we'll never see them again. And it's all her fault.
Valentine quickly covers her mouth. She hopes that she didn't wake the children. However, she is so upset she guzzles the glass of beer until the last drop. Her husband looks at her in awe.
Damn, Val, it's not water.
Chris, Nevin's dead, she cried. It's so sad. I should have known this was going to happen.
Baby, I think you had enough.
Sweetheart, Valentine cried, wiping her tears. I'm fine.
No, you need to go to bed.
Christopher, I'm fine.
Christopher softly takes her hand.
I'll make it up to you.
I'll come to bed with you, hold you in my arms, stroke your hair till you fall asleep. What do you say?
Valentine looks deep into his ocean blue eyes and says, I say, give it to me right here, and then you can hold me in bed.
Why here? We can take it to the shower.
Even better.
All right. Let me get us a refill.
He gets up and goes to the kitchen to refill his and his wife's beer glasses. 5 minutes later, after refilling the glasses, he finds his wife asleep on the couch. He shakes his head and smiles at her.
What a lightweight, Christopher says to himself.
Christopher places a glass of beer down on the table and carries Valentine in his arms to bed. Little does the couple know that their daughter, Yvonne Lee, lies in bed wide awake. While her little brother sleeps in the next bed and her parents went to bed, Yvonne Lee cries softly to herself. Her pillow is saturated with her tears from the news of Nevin's passing. She also misses playing with the triplets, Argentina, Mandela, and Corinthian. Poor Yvonne Lee. She is consumed with grief and loss, but does not know how to deal with it. Weeks later, after the breakup, Zara becomes ill. Her headache and chest pains are getting worse, and she cannot keep her food down. However, things become worse when one of the co-workers finds her on the floor. They immediately get the manager, who calls 911. Everyone is significantly concerned about her. She hasn't been the same since her breakup with Anton. Her physical and her emotional being was extremely bad. The EMTs roll her into the back of the ambulance, where she is taken into the nearest hospital. One of the EMTs tried to get as much information from Zora, but Zora was incoherent. She needs serious medical attention. When they arrive at the hospital, they take her to ER. The nurse approaches Zora Grant and and asks how she's feeling. With little strength, she has explained to the nurse her symptoms. The nurse does the unusual procedure, takes samples of blood, her blood pressure, her temperature. Finally, she has Zora for a urine sample. Then she lays back down on the hospital bed to rest. Zora eventually goes into a deep sleep. When she wakes up, she's in a hospital room. "What is this?" Zora thinks to herself. "How did I get here?" A nurse comes into her room to do her rounds. Besides her white, crisp nurse uniform, she wears a pink button-down sweater, plus a gold chain with a medallion of St. Agatha of Sicily and a watch. Her white nurse cap still stands out from her feathered flaming red hair. When she comes to Zora's bed, she asks, "Excuse me, nurse, but what happened last night?" The nurse replies, "I don't know, sweetheart. I just started my shift this morning. Maybe they wanted to keep you overnight for observation, but I think it'd be best if you wait for the doctor to see you." The nurse continues with her duties. Suddenly, Zora replies, "I don't mean to trouble you again, but I'm starving." "No, say no more, baby. I'll get you some breakfast." "Thank you so much, Nurse Luisaida." "Nurse Luisaida. That's a beautiful name." "Thanks. Unfortunately, people have a hard time saying Luisaida, so I suggest that they call me Lois." "Hey, you're January and Jason's daughter, right?" She replies with a smile. "You know my parents? I have known your mother since nursing school." "Really?" "Yeah. We went to St. Agatha of Sicily School of Nursing. I know your father through your mother. He was such a nice man. How are they doing?" "My mother is fine, but my father died." "I see. I'm sorry." "That's okay. Mommy and I are doing fine. Anyway, I'll get you your breakfast. I'll try to find something delicious." "Thank you, Nurse Lois." When the nurse brought Zora her breakfast, Zora eats as if she is on her way to an electric chair. It's not long until her breakfast comes back to haunt her. She holds her mouth, leaps out of bed, and rushes to the bathroom. Zora then falls to her knees and buries her face right in the toilet to vomit, and then slowly lifts her head. "Oh no," she thinks to herself. "I feel like death." She slowly stands on her feet and slowly walks to the face basin. She turns on the water to wash the remnants of vomit from her mouth. Then a thought dawns on her. Could it be? Maybe. She thinks back to the series of events that happened in the past few weeks. Her achy body, fatigue, constant vomiting, and fainting on the floor. Maybe this is something else, like stress or overwork. This can't be signs of stress. Zora convinced herself that it probably was stress. After all, she is still trying to get over her heartbreak over Anton. Zora goes back to her bed to rest. All she can hear is the phrase, "I'm getting married," echoing in her mind. She begins to cry, but she abruptly stops because she knows it will cause a massive headache. Then the doctor comes into the room to see Zora. "Good morning, Miss Grant," the doctor greets. "I'm Dr. Brighton." "Dr. Brighton." "Good morning, Dr. Brighton. How are you doing today? I feel the same way I did the past few weeks. Crappy." "Well, we view your tests.
and the crappy feeling you have is entirely normal for a woman in your situation. I figured that. I mean, I've been under a lot of stress and overwhelming and overworked by my job. Well, I can tell you this, it's not stress. And if you are working too hard, relax. That's not good for, it's not good for the two of you. Excuse me? Two? Miss Grant, you're pregnant. Zora is in shock. She cannot and doesn't want to believe that. Are you sure? She asks. The doctor nods his head. She sinks into the pillow and takes a deep breath. Zora finally asks, how far along am I? You're in your third month, and it's a single birth, which means you're carrying one fetus. I highly suggest that you take care of yourself and your baby. I'll have the nurse check your temperature and your blood pressure. Before you get discharged, which is probably be later on today, I'll write a couple of prescriptions for you. But you have to take them to the pharmacy before you leave the hospital. Is that clear? Yes, doctor. Until then, relax. Sure. The doctor leaves the room. A baby. I'm going to have a baby. Zara places her hands over her stomach. She thinks to herself about the time she and Anton made love, planting kisses on each other's bodies, laying naked in each other's arms, skin to skin. He would whisper, my Sonia, I love you. With tears in her eyes, she wonders, what am I going to do? How could you do this to me, Anton? I need you so much. Zara was so scared. She is facing a huge responsibility with no support from Anton. Then a door opens. It is Fabiola and her mother, January Grant. Zora's mother, January Grant, does not have a problem with interracial dating. Zora's father, Jason Grant, would not have had a problem with the relationship either if he was still alive. Tragically, he passed away from a car accident when Zora was 4 years old. Since her husband's death, January Grant plays the dual role of working mother and working as mother and father. It is difficult for January, but Zora had a happy childhood nonetheless. All they had was each other. Zora, January exclaims, rushing to her bedside. I got in late, but the hospital left me a message on my answering machine. What the hell happened to you? She looks at Fabiola and her mother, stone face, and says, I'm pregnant. You're what? Her mother exclaims. I'm going to have a baby. Oh, boy. Fabiola says with shock as she sat on her bed. I'm scared, Zora started. I don't know what to do. I can't get an abortion. And the father of my unborn child is getting married to another woman. Wait a second. Zora's mother says, still in shock. Are you telling me that Anton's the father? You mean, she said Fabiola. Yes, answered Zora. Anton is about to make another girl his wife and make me his baby mama. Confessed Zora. Does he know that he's the father of your baby? Asked Fabiola. No. Anton doesn't know that I'm pregnant. And he's not going to know about the baby. What difference does it make? Another woman's going to be his wife, not me. Oh, no, exclaims January. I'm going to get a hold of his parents and tell them their son is not knocked up my daughter. Another thing, starts Fabiola. He's marrying someone else, Nana. You have to face that reality and let it go. I know, Zora confessed. But I don't want to complicate things for Anton. Him, January retorts. What about you? He has complicated your life by knocking you up and dumping you. You're pregnant with his child, and you need to help. and you need all the help you can get from him. Besides, he has the right to know about his baby. He left me, Zora cries. And you don't have the right to take his baby away from him because you broke your heart. That sounds like some bitter baby mama drama. As soon as we get home, I'm calling his parents. Mama, no, Zora cries. I could care less about the fact that he's getting married to another woman. You didn't make this baby by yourself. He is the father, and he's going to take care of his responsibility for his actions. Fabiola was so overwhelmed by the news that she had to sit down on the bed. Suddenly, there was a knock at the door. It was Nurse Luisaida. Okay, Nena, Luisa says. Coming back into the room with a tray of food, I brought something muy rico for January. Fabiola, Luisaida. January and Fabiola exclaim. How are you? Luisaida asks. Well, we just found out that my daughter is pregnant. January confessed with a slight disappointment. Oh, Nena, don't feel bad, Luisaida says. There are lots of single parents in this world, and they are raising their children just fine, like me. Bueno, I hope you can keep this food down. Otherwise, eat toast only. Fabiola then replies, look, Zora, you're going through a lot right now. There's a lot of things you have to take into consideration. Important things that don't include your unrequited love for Anton. Whatever you need, Nena. I know you'll be there for me, but Fab, I don't know anything about children. Do you think your father and I knew how to take care of you? Babies don't come with a book of instructions, January started. Look, right now, just take care of yourself and my grandchild. You're not alone. You have me and another thing, baby. We may be Catholic, but we are not perfect. People make mistakes, especially Catholics. Yes, you made a mistake of getting pregnant without being wed. Hey, you probably made the mistake of having sex before being wed. But it's too late to change that. You're having a baby. Did you think about no? Zora exclaims. I can't do that. Kill an innocent life? This baby hasn't done anything. Good. Because thou shalt not kill, January said. Every life has a purpose. Despite the circumstances. Okay, how about putting the baby up for adoption? Fabiola suggested. Well, that could be an option. Yeah, you could help a couple who can't have children. You would be giving them a blessing. Hold on, girls, January says. This is my grandchild. Let's not be too hasty with what to do with the baby yet. We have to weigh our options first. I'm still going to talk to Mr. and Mrs. Braganza. Zora sighs and says, there's so much to think about. Take one day at a time. We'll be with you every step of the way, assures January. People slowly pour into Holy Chalice Catholic Church. Nevin touched a lot of people's lives. Not only family and friends attended the funeral, but the regulars from Newkirk's Bar, as well as the clergy he had worked with before his death, came to say their goodbyes. Despite Sabine's order, those from the Rainbow District showed up to pay their respects, but they had to keep a low profile. Nevin's parents fly from out of town to attend the funeral. The couple keeps to themselves. They are so unsocial and they keep a low profile. However, Sabine Lareed, the widow of the late Nevin Lareed, walks regally with her triplets at toe. Sabine makes sure that she and her children do not look like an everyday family of poverty. Instead, Sabine and her children dress the part of the grieving family of a tycoon. Sabine's face is entirely caked with makeup. Her black floppy hat with her cupid zirconian diamond brim covers her neat, sleek hair, which is pinned in a bun. Her fashion jewelry, which is considered of earrings, matching bracelets, and a necklace, is made of marcasite. Sabine's black faux fur jacket and faux leather gloves do her no justice in covering her fitted black dress, which shows the curves and cleavage of her body. The finishing touch of Mrs. Nareen's outfit, black hosiery and black stilettos. Her daughters, Argentina and Corinthia Nareen, wore matching black dresses with white lace trimming. They also wore white lace tights with patent leather black Mary Jane shoes. Her son, Mandela Nareed, wore a black pinstripe suit with a crisp white shirt and black and white Oxfords. Sabine and her children sit in a fourth pew in front of the church. Despite their appearances, Sabine is stone-faced, but the children are sad. "I don't want to be here," Argentina confesses softly to Corinthian. "These statues are so big and scary. I want to go home." "I know. I wish I had my doll, but Mommy took it away from me," Corinthian replies. It's not long until Sabine's family arrives at the church. Jabari Montague and his brother Malcolm Jr., Montague, accompany their mother, Hyacinth Montague. Hyacinth Montague is the monarch of the Montague family. She treated Nevin like another son. Also, it is strange that Nevin has a closer relationship with the Montagues than his wife. They walk to the front of the pew, but they quickly notice Sabine and the children. Someone calls her name, but for some reason, Sabine could not hear anyone. Mentally, she is a million miles away. However, when she feels a poking in the arm, she is startled by the touch. "Mommy, Mommy," Mandela cries to his mother. Sabine turns to her son. "What is it, boy?" Sabine asks angrily. "Uncle MJ wants you," Mandela replies with fear. She looks up and sees her brother looking down at her. "How are you doing?" Malcolm Jr. asks. "I'm fine. I just want this to be over so I can get on with my life," she replies, looking forward, stone face. Malcolm Jr. rolls his eyes, taking a deep breath, and says, "Well, Mama's having a get together at the house, and I'm not going." "Okay, I'll just take the children." "You are not taking my children either. Why can't the children come to their grandmother's house?" Sabine sternly says, "I don't. I said you can't." "Okay, I know you're angry. I know your anger is not towards me, but Sabine, you and the children should not be alone now. You guys need some support and comfort." "I am their support and comfort," snaps Sabine. Could we please just go to grandma's house, Mommy? "Please, Mommy?" Corinthian asks her mother. "I said no. Don't start on my nerves in God's house," she scolds her daughter. Sabine becomes so frustrated with her brother, she gets up and grabs Malcolm Jr. to the corner of the church. Malcolm Jr. says, pulling her arm away from his sister's grip, "First of all, don't ever pull on my suit. And second of all, don't preach to me about my family's well-being. We are fine dealing with Nevin's death. Speaking of your suit, it's a hand-me-down." "Oh, really?" "Yes. My nieces and nephew don't look like they're holding it well. Did you ever explain to them about death and dying?" Sabine laughs and says, "That's the reason I pay for Catholic school. They teach them about about stuff like that. You, Miss Thing, are unbelievable. The father of your children is dead. Your children are scared and confused, and you leave it to the Catholic school. And you leave it to Catholic school to do your parenting. Okay, folks, so my time is almost up. This isn't the end of the chapter, but I will continue in about 10 minutes. So be ready for part two of chapter two of Chalice, the Book of Life. And again, if you're interested in reading the book, you will find the book in Walmart online, only online. It's not sold in stores. You can find the book on BookBub and Amazon. Paperbacks are sold for $11, and the Kindle is sold for $4 if you don't have Kindle. But otherwise, if you do have Kindle, it's free. So, this concludes the first part of The World of Aja Pearl. It's my world, and I'm so happy you're here. Later.